Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Signature Symphony at TCC opens its season this weekend with a program that fits squarely within music director Andres Franco's season theme of a world passport. During the course of the year, they feature music from six continents, and they begin with the Canadian Quartango group that specializes in the national music of Argentina, the tango. The evening will feature traditional tango music along with the music of Astor Piazzolla, Ennio Morricone, even a little Argentine-flavored Dave Brubeck, as well as tango dancers. Quartango won the Canadian Juno Award for Best Instrumental Album of the Year last year, and the previous year won the Opus Award for Best World Music Album of the Year. They'll join the Signature Symphony for two concerts, tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 at the Vantrese Pace. Signature Symphony Artistic Director Andres Franco is my guest today, and before we begin, I must disclose that I am a member of the Signature Symphony as we talk about the opening of their season, beginning tonight at the Vantrese Pace. Andres Franco, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Rich. How are you?
Very well. And you put together a season this year that's sort of all sorts of international music using the symphony orchestra, and the season gets underway with an evening of tango music. Now, I think when most Americans think of tango music, they think of what I'd call stylized American tangos, which would be Blue Tango or Jalousy, which is actually written by a Danish composer, believe it or not. And it's sort of a very stylized dance, and it's almost a stiff and formal dance structure. But when you get to real Argentinian tangos and the real sound of a tango, it is just the most utterly amazing music around. Tell us a little about what we're going to hear in this concert tonight.
Well, the concert tonight and tomorrow will feature Quartango, which is a tango quartet from Canada. But they are really amazing musicians. They won the Juno Award, which is the equivalent of the Grammy Award in Canada for one of their recent instrumental recordings. And they bring with them two dancers who are from Argentina, Roxana and Fabian Belmonte, who have danced all around the world. They just went to Sicily, and I learned recently that they actually were featured in one of Jackie Chan's movies, The Tuxedo. There's a tango scene, and they are the dancers in that particular movie. And that combination of music and dance, when it's done at such high level, is really exciting. Tango is very passionate. It's very sophisticated. It has so many different influences that it picked up throughout history of the genre, that you can hear anything from African music and African rhythm to European music to Creole music from Argentina. And in some arrangements, you can even hear Bach. You know, Piazzolla was a big Bach lover, so you would hear fugues. But you will also hear a little bit of Rachmaninoff. So it's really a genre that has morphed many times. And again, it has picked different influences, musical and otherwise, throughout the history.
And there's actually two types of tango in Argentina. There's the tango, which is sort of the traditional form, and then Astor Piazzolla came around, and then they actually dubbed his music the Nuovo Tango, or the New Tango. And this program is a little more of the New Tango.
I think it has a nice combination of, there's a lot of new tango. So new tango basically is taking what tango had become in the 1940s or so and infusing it with jazz, with a little bit of 20th century music, like, you know, Piazzolla loved Stravinsky and Bartok and Ginastera. He actually studied with Nadia Boulanger in Paris, and he absorbed all of those influences. And he lived in the States, so he actually moved to New York City when he was 4 years old. Yeah. So he also absorbed all the jazz, and then he worked throughout his life in different parts of the world. So he took what had become then the traditional Argentinian tango, and he infused it with these new currents, which created Nuevo Tango or New Tango. So we will hear multiple arrangements that will definitely fall into the new tango category, including one of Piazzolla's most famous tangos, Adios Nonino, which is an homage to his father. But we will also hear what is considered probably the first tango or the first recognizable tango, which is El Choclo. And that actually opens the first half of the program. We'll play an overture. But then when Quartango joins us, we'll play El Choclo, which is one of the most recognizable tangos and considered one of the very first tangos. We will also hear La Comparsita, which is another very famous tango that is more on the old school. But yeah, definitely there's going to be a little bit of everything. You know, there's, right. there's popular music, there's folk music, there's a little bit of classical music, there's jazz. So it's I think, a very nice way of showing what music in this entire continent of the Americas is, because we, you know, all the way from northern Canada to the southern tip of Argentina, is the same story. The Native Americans, be it Native North Americans, Native South Americans, Native Central Americans, were here. Then the Europeans came and brought their culture. They also brought African slaves at the time with them, which brought their culture. And then people from Asia and all around the world started migrating to this big continent. And it's the same basic ingredient, but then the combination and the ratio between one and the other is different. And of course, in South America and Central America, we have a lot of Spanish and Portuguese, a little bit of French culture. And here in the United States, is primarily British, it was predominant. But, you know, again, throughout history, we also had Irish immigrants and German and Polish, and, you know, from everywhere. So it's really very interesting to see how those different elements play different roles in throughout the continent. And I think tango is very similar to, in a way, to jazz music here, which is the same. You know, it started with basically African music, and then the influence from the European immigrants came along, and then it morphed throughout the years. So the same thing happened with tango, except, you know, the interplay between cultures is slightly different.
Now, we do have this is a Canadian group, French-Canadian, I would say, for the most part, although it's probably a mixed group there, but there's sort of a stylized, well, the instrumentation is very popular, like in Paris cafes in the 20s and 30s, with the bandoneon or an accordion, a violin, but I think of it as totally different musics.
It is, so that's the interesting thing. Tango, we think about it as such a sophisticated dance, because we have that image of Paris, even like right before World War One. Tango actually appeared in Argentina in the late 1800s. And it was really just a dance of the lowest of the lowest of the lowest classes. So at that time,
there just was like jazz was.
There was a, but even worse. I mean, these were like criminals were the ones dancing. Like if you are listening to tango, you know you are in a very bad part of town, a very dangerous one. And there were immigrants came from Europe at that time, again, like 1880s or so. And they landed in the port of Buenos Aires. It's a very interesting story because, you know, my wife is Argentinian, but her grandparents, and from that point backwards, they are Italian. So she's an Italian citizen as well as an Argentina, as well as an American citizen. But the ships took off from Europe and people were just trying to get out of Europe to the New World, quote unquote. But the New World really meant anything on America, on the American continent. So depending on sea currents, depending on weather, those ships would land either in New York City or in Rio de Janeiro, or in Buenos Aires. And sometimes when they got into a river and they were going to go to a port of Buenos Aires, if there was a big storm, they couldn't get there. So they would end on Montevideo, which is on the other side in Uruguay. So it was really a matter of chance where you landed. So if you happened to land in Argentina or Uruguay, for that matter, then you arrived. There were a lot of males and very few females. So they started this dance that was the tango. And a lot of times they would have to practice between two males, and then one of them would be the lead and the other one would follow, just to practice how to dance it. So when they actually got a chance to dance with a woman, they knew what they were doing.
So are you saying that the tango is the basic equivalent of accordion dance?
Yeah, it would go even further, because we're talking really about the bordelos of the region. So it was almost a mating dance is what it was. And so it started in a very rough part of Buenos Aires. And when I say this, I mean like places where there would be knife fights on a regular basis. And it was looked down from the upper classes in Argentina. But then later, the children from these upper classes, they found that very attractive, of course, and they would learn it, you know, against their parents' wishes. And then when they went to Paris, because, you know, of course, they are upper class, they would go to Paris. Everyone had to go to Paris at the time. They showed off that dance, and then people in Paris went crazy. So little by little, this dance that was really not acceptable socially in Argentina became a craze in Europe and also in the United States. I was just reading something this week that in 1916, there were advertisements in New York in different newspapers for 700 tango groups. I mean, tango clubs, right, where you could go and learn how to tango. 700 in New York City. And Paris was even bigger. So what happened was that that music was taken to Paris, and then it became a lot more sophisticated. And it went everywhere. Tango is the national dance of Finland, which is one of the most unlikely things you can ever think of. But they have a festival where, you know, 100,000 people or so go every year to this tiny little town just to dance tango. And so there's basically a Finnish tango, there's an American tango, there's an Argentinian tango. And it became also a ballroom dance in a more stylized and sanitized way as well.
Right. And that's the sort of, I think, most Americans are maybe familiar with the ballroom version. But what I love about tango music, one, is a lot of dance music, it's fun to listen to, but it's better to dance to. But I find tango music just incredibly wonderful to listen to because there's this wonderful flow, ebb and flow throughout the piece. And it's almost like breathing in a way.
It is, and rhythmically is very strong. Normally, tango is very strong rhythmically. You can feel the beats very strongly, but the melodies are very nice and delicate. So it's this juxtaposition of something that is very grounded, very strong, very angular in the rhythm, but then the melody can still keep this very lyrical quality to it.
But it also has this sense of where you're going along, you have that strong rhythmic feel, and then all of a sudden the bottom drops out for a few bars. You know, it's just this sort of, and it's almost like a, I guess for tango dancers, it's a matter of really knowing the song to know how the song is going to go and how you have to be a part of the song when you're dancing it.
Absolutely. You know, we just celebrated the 20th anniversary of the Vantry space on TCC Southeast Campus this Wednesday. So just 2 days ago, it was literally that day that it opened, September 7th. And we had an open house, and we actually had the dancers that will be dancing tonight and tomorrow. They came to we opened the rehearsal as well. So people could come and listen to a rehearsal, and they gave a little demonstration, and they actually improvise from time to time. So there's a way in which the male, who's the leader, usually the lead person in the dance, with his hand, he lets the partner know which direction they are turning. But then the female can also let him know when she wants him to stop so that she can improvise. And there are figures that she draws on the floor with her feet. And that way he knows when to stop, and then she can. So it's really a give and take between male and female partners. And, you know, these days there are tango dancers, there are two males or two females. It doesn't really matter. But in terms of the person who's leading and the person who's following, there's a give and take. And I think what happens is that in those places that are more rhythmic, they probably will be more structured dancing. And then when it relaxes, then they can improvise a little bit. But yeah, you definitely have to know your song, and you have to know tango is probably one of the hardest dances because it's not as easy to learn as, I mean, not, I'm saying that the waltz is easy, but it's a little more obvious. Tango is, in a way, is very abstract dancing. I mean, the steps are there, yes, but there's so much room for improvisation that it becomes a very rich dance.
My guest today is Andres Franco, a music director of the Signature Symphony. Signature Symphony opens their season this weekend with the program, their first Pops concert devoted to tango music featuring Quartango from Canada, and a really talented group of individuals, and they're actually writing music for their group. So, yeah. I mean, this is not music from, I mean, some of it is music from the past, but they're still writing new tango music and just really gorgeous, gorgeous writing.
Yeah, I think that's something that is very interesting about this group is that they all have their own very specific backgrounds. They come from different disciplines within music. I had a chance to talk with all of them really last night, and René Gosselin, who is the founder of Quartango, he is the bass player, but he's also the principal bass of the Metropolitan Orchestra in Montreal. But then the bandoneon player, Jonathan, he is a musicologist. So each one of them brings a whole different universe within themselves that they bring to the tango group. And we will hear some original compositions by Stéphane Aubin, who's the pianist. And it's called Rouge, and it's a wonderful, wonderful composition. I think you'll love it. It has a lot of tango, of course, but it has so many other elements to it that you can tell that he has a classical music upbringing as well as jazz background. So it's really wonderful to see, again, how so many different genres that you normally wouldn't think of as belonging in the same category do cross over when you perform tango, which I think is a great way to open our 2016-17 season World Passport, a symphonic excursion, because that's what we are doing. We are going all around the world. And by focusing on tango, you can really include music from many different places. There's even going to be a Celtic milonga tonight, believe it or not, and some Dave Brubeck.
That's right, Dave Brubeck, Argentinianized Dave Brubeck. But let's hear a little bit of Rouge first. Let's hear some music by Quartango from Canada, the guest artist for tonight's Signature Symphony Pops concert. That's music by Quartango, the featured guest with the Signature Symphony as they open their season with an evening devoted to tango music. My guest is Andres Franco, a music director of Signature Symphony. And as you alluded to earlier, this evening of tango music kicks off a whole season concept that you've come up for the orchestra, which involves bringing all the music of the world and music of living world composers into the season this year. Explain your philosophy for this passport idea for the season.
Well, the idea actually just came from the fact that I was born in Colombia. I have lived in the United States for 16 years now.
And you're down a United States citizen.
An American citizen. My wife was born in Argentina. She's Italian as well because her grandparents and all the way back from there, they're all Italian. She also has lived in the States for 20 years or so, and she's also an American citizen. And we love traveling around the world. And as musicians, we get to perform music from many different cultures. And as a very good friend of mine said, you know, music has a way of bypassing the intellect and going directly to your heart, that you can learn about cultures just by listening to music. And you can learn many things about those cultures that would take, you know, pages and pages if you wanted to write them down. If you go to tonight's concert and you see tango dancing and you hear tango, you will learn more about Argentinian culture than you can do in any other way, except maybe for wine drinking. You know, that I think drinking wine also tells you a lot about different cultures. But the idea, and by the way, I also love food and wine and traveling and music. So my idea was, why don't we just put together a season that just shows what a wonderful variety we have in the world of classical music, of symphonic music, of pops music as well, and bring a world of music to Tulsa. So the idea is really to go to as many continents as possible. So this is not just playing a Bach piece and saying, you know, Bach was German, so we have an international season, which, you know, of course is valid. But I really wanted to go outside the usual suspects in classical music, at least, which would be European composers. So we will be presenting music by composers born in almost 20 different countries. And in 6 continents. So we hit every possible continent. Antarctica was the only one that, for obvious penguins, yes.
Penguins don't write music.
Yeah, but I joke that we may play one of those penguin movie music in our Oscars show. So then you go, you have all continents covered. But the idea was to bring music from countries we don't necessarily associate with orchestral music. So there will be music from Turkey, there will be music from Colombia, from Nigeria, from Australia, from China, and of course from the Czech Republic, from Austria, from Germany, France, and, you know, the countries, the United States, of course, Mexico, Peru, Spain, and I'm missing many countries here because, again, there's a long list of composers we will be performing.
Well, your first classics concert coming up in a couple of weeks sort of shows off this philosophy. In your classics concert, you have one very familiar piece on every concert. In this case, it'll be Mussorgsky's Pictures in an Exhibition. But the other two works are almost unknown pieces by a Turkish composer, Sai, and a Chinese composer, Huang. And those are living composers. And that was also sort of an important thing for you to do in this particular season.
And in general, if you look at our first season, and even if you look at when I auditioned, I have conducted at least one piece by a living composer. For the 3 years I have been coming to Tulsa, I was officially named music director last year. But, you know, last year we performed a piece by Jennifer Higdon and a piece by Peter Boyer on our classics concert. And this season we're going to be performing music by living composers in virtually every concert. And we will have Oklahoma premieres in every classics concert. Because I think it's very important to know that there is a tradition. So Mussorgsky Pictures at an Exhibition, of course, is a very well-known piece. But there's classical music or orchestral music being written today. Right now, as we speak, there are hundreds and maybe thousands of composers writing music. And some of that music is very, very good. And I want to share that music and make sure that we are continuing the tradition, not just by honoring the classics and by honoring the past, but by making sure that there is a present and a future for orchestral composers.
And one of the things that often happens with living composers is commissions, those come. The premieres, the world premieres, the U.S. premieres, those come. But additional performances down the road sometimes can be hard to come by for living composers. Is that also part of the philosophy to sort of take, you know, you've written a good piece, it deserves to be played, whether it's a premiere or not, even if it's an Oklahoma premiere, as you were talking about?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. A lot of times composers work very hard to get a commission, and then there's a lot of effort put, and then the piece gets played once, and then it goes in the shelf, and of course it exists, but for music, which is a performing art, unless it's being played, I mean, sure, everything exists in abstract, but music has to be played for anyone to be able to experience it. I mean, unless you're a conductor and can hear it in your head and so forth, but, you know, that's no fun. There's no public in that case. So, yes, the idea is to make sure that those pieces that are very good, very engaging, get performed more regularly, and hopefully this will also inspire other orchestras to do the same.
Now, some of these composers are fairly obscure, I mean, at least to even people who follow classical music. How did you find the music that made up this program?
You know, being a music director, being a conductor is wonderful because I get emails all the time from different people, from soloists, from composers themselves, from other conductors, from many people telling me, you know, I heard this very good piece, or I just wrote a piece, or I am a soloist and I know this concerti. And so it's a combination of many different things. I think we talked a little bit last time I was here about Caminos del Inca, which is this non-for-profit organization I work for that was created to preserve the music of the Americas. So we work with living composers, and of course you have this network of friends who are in the classical composition world today, and then they let you know different composers they have heard. In the particular case of the first concert, which is just in a few weeks, the concert is on September 24th, the Chinese piece by Anlun Wang is called Sai Bei Dance, and that was a colleague of mine who is music director of the Chicago Sinfonietta, Mei-Yan Chen, who had played this particular piece and had told me, you know, this is a great piece, and the Chicago Sinfonietta recorded the piece, so you can find it on YouTube. And I did conduct the Chicago Sinfonietta last November, so we exchanged texts, and then when I was working on this particular project of creating the season, then I asked them to send me the recording, so I listened to a recording, and I said, yeah, this piece is very good. So we contacted the composer who actually lives in Canada, and that's how I found the piece. Then in the case of the Turkish piece, which is a violin concerto based on 1001 Nights, that's the subtitle of the piece, it was the soloist who had written to me. He's a young virtuoso violinist who is very much interested in making sure that the new violin concertos that are very engaging and that will have a very direct connection with the audience and they have something to say get played. So he has this list of concertos that he really wants to champion, and he sent me a list, and I listened to all of them. And I say, great, I'll see when I can program that one. And then when the theme of the season started being clear that it was going to be international music, music from around the world, this concerto fell in place very, very easily. And, you know, there's so many other things that come into play, like, you know, is the artist available? And you know, programming is a big puzzle, like, in several dimensions. It's not just how the pieces come together, but is the soloist you want to present available for that particular week or not. So, you know, by the end of the process, everything starts falling into place. And that's how this particular program came about. Which is great because, of course, we are performing three pieces, but we are representing five different countries because Mussorgsky was orchestrated by Maurice Ravel, and it's a very French style of orchestration. So even though the music was written by a Russian, you also have that French flavor. And An Lung Huang was born in China, but he emigrated to Canada many, many years ago. So we have five flags for the three pieces.
Now, later in the season, you're going to be featuring African composers. You mentioned a composer from Nigeria. I know there is a piece at the end of the year that's going to feature didgeridoo. It's not necessarily a didgeridoo concerto, but it's a piece that's sort of solo features a didgeridoo.
And shakuhachi as well, the Japanese bamboo flute and saxophone and percussion. As well. So yes, there will be a lot of very interesting instruments throughout the season. That particular piece I love because of the story behind it. That piece is called Dawn Mantras by Australian composer Ross Edwards. And the piece was actually written and commissioned for the dawn of the millennium. So that's why it's called Dawn Mantras. And Sydney was one of the first, well, actually was the first major city to cross into the 21st century. So, you know, they are way ahead of us. At least 24 hours, I think, is what it is. So the piece was actually performed at the top of the Sydney Opera House on December 31st, 1999, as we were going into a new millennium. And it's a beautiful piece. You can also find recordings of the piece. I just love it. But it's for didgeridoo, shakuhachi, different types of percussion, children's choir, male chorus, and boy soprano. And we are going to be partnering with the Tulsa Youth Opera for that particular concert. That's another thing that we will be doing throughout the season, is I really wanted not only to bring a world of music to Tulsa, but also to make sure that we reach out to all the performing and cultural organizations in town. So we will be presenting on our stage artists from different organizations, including the Tulsa Ballet, the Tulsa Opera, the Tulsa Youth Opera. We will also partner with the Gilchrist Museum and the Tulsa Historical Society, as well as with El Sistema, and so many more that it really would be a very long list right now. But, you know, on the main stage, we will be working with the ballet, the opera, the Gilchrist, and the Tulsa Historical Society.
It sounds like you're bringing a world of music to the Signature Symphony this year, and it all opens tonight and tomorrow with their first Pops concert, Quartango, featuring the Signature Symphony. Andres, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, Rich, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to a wonderful season of music.
Andres Franco is the music director of the Signature Symphony, which gets their season underway with their first Pops concert devoted to tango music featuring the Canadian group Quartango. Performance times are tonight at 7:30, Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Van Trees Pace. For ticket information, call 918-595-7777. That's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.